Welcome in to another edition of the Orange and Blue News podcast. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the Big Ten tournament preview, which is scheduled to start on Wednesday over in Indianapolis. And we have with us tonight from Ohio State, Griffin Storm, who represents Buckeye Grove, Tom Cakert from Iowa, who represents the Hawkeye Report, and Michael Tulip from Illinois. I am Jim Cotter, your moderator, and Doug Bouchon, the publisher of Orange and Blue News. We're going to get started here just by going around alphabetically. We'll start with Mike LaTulip from Illinois, and we'll just talk about the team that you represent and your outlook for the Big Ten tournament that's coming up. So, Mike, go ahead and take it away.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. Well, first things first with Illinois, I think most people can be in agreement that there may not be a hotter team coming into the Big Ten tournament in terms of not only the wins that they had in terms of just, you know, the number of wins that they had coming into the tournament, but the type of wins, right? You know, three straight on the road, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Michigan. You know, three teams that have found themselves towards the top of this league for a long time. You know, and then the way that they won those games, you know, Wisconsin, just a gutsy performance in the second game without Io. And then you head into Michigan where not many people are giving you a chance to win. And you put a shellacking on them without Io. Io comes back for Ohio State and Io finishes the game. You know, and a lot of different guys stepped up in a lot of different ways. And I thought that, you know, these last couple games have been a microcosm of what Brad Underwood's been able to do in terms of his adjustments throughout the season or his non-adjustments when it comes to not starting Andre Curbelo when everybody wanted him to start Andre Curbelo. You know, he served in that, especially in that Michigan game and especially in that Ohio State game, as being that energizer bunny who kind of gets things rolling after that first media timeout. And, you know, this is a team that's going to have a chip on their shoulder in more ways than one. They clearly think they should have had a share of that Big Ten title for the regular season. I'm sure Io DeSumo feels a tad slighted on the player of the year voting. So they have a lot to play for. I think anytime you're looking at a team that's locked up a number one seed for the NCAA tournament, your first thought is, okay, you know, what do they have to play for the Big Ten tournament? When you look and say, all right, well, if they win it, you know, they keep the one seed. If they lose it, they probably still keep the one seed. So they have plenty of things to be motivated about when it comes to this tournament. And I like their matchup. I like their route. You know, they're playing as it stands right now. You have Indiana and Rutgers, and the winner of that game, you know, both are very poor offensive teams, but are kind of grinded out defensive teams. But I think, as anyone knows, in March, you got to be able to knock down free throws, and Indiana and Rutgers happen to be 12th and 13th in the Big Ten in doing that. I do like their ride. We talk about Iowa as well. We'll see what happens with Joe Wieskamp as we go through the week. But this team's clicking at the right time. They've truly, you know, taken this season to grow. They came in with lofty expectations and bit of a roller coaster ride there for a little bit, but as it stands right now, they're exactly where at least Illini fans have expected them to be, and that's contending for not only a Big Ten title but a national title.
Thanks, Mike. Tom, let's talk about Iowa for a few minutes, shall we?
Yeah, it's you know, Mike brought up Joe Wieskamp, and that's probably the lead item for the Hawkeyes this week is you know, what's going on with Joe Wieskamp and his ankle. He rolled his ankle about 12 minutes in, and he was playing, you know, it's funny, after the game, Fran McCaffrey, Luca Garza, and Jordan Bohannon all said, kind of independently, he was headed for like a 40-point game because he was 5-5 from the field and 12 points in 12 minutes, and he hadn't missed. He was dialed in, and his ankle, and had to be helped to the locker room. He was in a walking boot after that. You couple that with, you know, Jack Nungy having knee surgery, so you're down a big. C.J. Frederick has been battling a plantar fascia issue in his foot. So you've got that injury that's kind of nagging, that's not going to get better until, you know, the off season probably. So they got a lot of walking wounded. So the story for this week really is Joe Wieskamp going to play? Because what is out there for Iowa this week? Is it, can they get to a one seed? I'm of the opinion, no, they probably can't. I just don't think they can. You know, Michigan's got a significant win head-to-head. Illinois's got the head-to-head win. Even if Iowa beats them, I still think Illinois's probably got a slightly better resume than Iowa does, just based on what they've accomplished on their schedule. So I don't know that they could get over them. And I also don't know that, you know, if Iowa lost on Friday and they were playing Wisconsin, I don't think they're going to go off the two line either. They're just sort of in this stuck right in two. The Wisconsin losing to Wisconsin wouldn't hurt them, I don't think, because they've beaten Wisconsin twice, and Iowa's path is weird. It's just they might be playing Wisconsin again. That was their last game. Then you'd face a pretty motivated Illinois team. Although Iowa at full strength would really like to get another crack at Illinois too. I do think that, but. Luca Garza talked about this today, that, you know, and I asked him about it. He came back for this. This is what he came back for, was March, and more specifically the NCAA tournament. He felt like last year when everything got shut down that they were ready to go on a run. And this, the monkey on the back of the Iowa program is pretty simple. It's, they have not made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament since 1998, since Dr. Tom Davis was still coaching. The last time Iowa made it to the Sweet 16, the second weekend. So that's the monkey that's on the back here in March. And that's, they jokingly said they packed for 28 days. They're leaving tomorrow to go to Indianapolis. So we'll see how many, if they make it to 28. But that's kind of the overview of Iowa right now.
Thanks, Tom. Let's now go to Griffin Strom, who represents Buckeye Grove, and talk about the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah, guys. So, Ohio State had won 10 out of 11 for a while there and, really had ascended to, the top three teams in the standings in the Big Ten until they ran into Michigan, which, that was a great game. But they came up short in that one, and then they proceeded to drop three after that. So they're on a four-game losing streak to end the regular season, which actually I went back and looked. It's the longest losing streak for Ohio State to end a regular season since, I believe, 1997. So, that's kind of a big that's kind of really halted their progress there at the end of the season. And kind of the big question for Ohio State is, can they get off the schneid here in the tournament? If they can win a few games, they can become, potentially a number two seed in the NCAA tournament, or, do they lose again and slip even further down? The Ohio State offense have been super hot when they're on that seven-game win streak, averaging like 81 points per game. In the last three games after the Michigan loss, they've been averaging 64 points per game. And then teams are just shooting, crazy percentages against Ohio State recently. I think the last four opponents are a combined 50% from the field against Ohio State and like 40% from three, which is just kind of crazy. You talk about injury issues. Ohio State's kind of had some lingering issues all season. Kyle Young has had leg injuries his whole career. So he's always like in and out of practice. He missed a game recently with a concussion, but he's back from that. Seth Towns has been kind of, more or less an important bench piece for them, but he really has kind of tapered off as of late. He's dealing with some lingering knee issues, of course, that he's been going on for a couple of years. And really just the rotation in general has kind of shrunk for Ohio State during this skid. For most of the year, Justin Arons was a huge three-point threat for Ohio State. But recently, he's had much less of an impact as teams have kind of swarmed him. And then kind of a big recurring trend for Ohio State at the end of some of these losses is that they're just going completely ice cold from the field at the end of games. And in the last game against Illinois, they missed their last 10 shots from the field, which is just I mean, you just can't win a game like that. And then against Michigan State, they missed their last eight, I think, as well. So closing out games, which is kind of a question for them earlier on in the season, they seem to have fixed that issue, you know, through that great stretch that they had. But since then, this skid that's kind of come up again is kind of a recurring issue. I mean, then in terms of Ohio State's path, it is kind of strange because every team Ohio State might play for the first few games already has a win over Ohio State this season. So first they get the winner of Northwestern and Minnesota. Both of those teams do have a win over Ohio State this year. Then you're going right into the Purdue matchup, of course, with and Purdue's the only team that's already beaten Ohio State twice this year. So, yeah, that's kind of the overview for Ohio State. Obviously, Dwayne Washington and Liddell have really been carrying the scoring load for Ohio State. Both those guys wound up on one of the three All-Big Ten teams today. But Washington's really been struggling at the end of games. Liddell's kind of been struggling from half to half during this skid they've been on. But yeah, those are kind of the big themes for Ohio State entering a tournament.
Thanks, Griffin. And now we've been joined by Brian Newbert of goldenblack.com. So we'll have Brian talk a little bit about the Purdue Boilermakers and their outlook heading into this week's action.
Yeah, late to the party, huh? So Purdue has the youngest team in the Big Ten, as everyone kind of knows. They go 13-6 in the league. They would have been 14-6 in the league had they gotten the home game against Nebraska. The most winnable game on their whole schedule was the one they lost. It didn't get made up, even though Purdue conceivably could have, under a different set of circumstances, could have lost out to Ohio State for the four seed by a fraction of a percentage point, despite beating Ohio State twice, simply because the Nebraska game wasn't getting played. But Purdue's kind of going into the postseason here with what you might look at as kind of found money. You know, they weren't supposed to be here. They were extremely young. They dealt with all kinds of circumstances here. Eric Hunter hurt his knee early in the season. Jaden Ivey hurt his foot early in the season. Ethan Morton, who was a really promising freshman for them, got mono before the season. Not COVID, mono. Sasha Stefanovic, who's a really important piece for them, got COVID in the middle of the season, missed three games, wasn't the same for a couple games afterwards. All kinds of circumstances they've dealt with this year, and it didn't stop them. They were way ahead of the game kind of all season long. And they closed the season on a five-game winning streak. I think their young players are getting a lot better. I think that their young players have gotten to a point where they're up to speed now and as good as they've been all year long. I think Purdue has found more offensive balance. There was a time there where Purdue really relied on Travion Williams, their first team All-Big Ten big man, for a lot. And now I think they don't need him as much. Purdue started the Big Ten season really with a tough schedule. They had to go to Illinois. They had to go to Iowa. They had to go to where else did they have to go? They had to go to Rutgers right off the bat. And obviously Illinois is really good. Obviously Iowa is really good. Obviously at that point in time, Rutgers was playing like we all expected them to play all season long. I think Purdue benefited from all of those difficult road games. I think at one point in time, they played four or five road games in a row because the Nebraska game got postponed. I think Purdue really benefited from that down the stretch, getting those really tough games right off the bat. They had a much more manageable schedule at the end of the year. Of their last like six or seven games, I think Wisconsin was the only ranked opponent, and they were just barely ranked. But I think Purdue's peaking at the right time here. I think a lot of stuff has come together lately. They're finally whole, and they've been whole for an extended period of time, which they haven't been able to say all season long. And I wouldn't want to play them in the Big Ten tournament. But at the same time, there are two teams in the league that would scare the hell out of me if I'm Purdue, and they're Illinois and Michigan. And you're not getting anywhere in the Big Ten tournament in terms of getting to the title game without having to run into one or the other. But I think Purdue's had a hell of a season thus far, and I think they have kind of changed the way we perceive them now in terms of what they can do in the postseason. If you just told me before the season, if you'd asked me before the season what a reasonable expectation would be, what success would mean, it would just be squeezing your way into the NCAA tournament no matter what. That would have been a huge win after what Purdue did last year, what they lost, all the questions they had, and then obviously losing the summer to COVID with all the freshmen Purdue was a big deal. But for them to be in the position they're in, with this being the ground floor of what they're building here, has been a, you know, a smashing success of a season, but obviously it's not over yet. We'll see what they can do in the postseason.
Hey, Brian, Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News. A quick question. You know, I wouldn't want to play Purdue, not just in the Big Ten tournament. I wouldn't want to play them in the NCAA tournament either right now, the way they're playing. And I've been on the Matt Painter bandwagon for a long time now. He's one of the best coaches in the conference. And were you surprised the way they finished the season? Because I wasn't. The thing about Painter is if he has time to scout you, he's going to know how to stop you and he's going to know how to score on you. And do you think this was his best coaching job since he's been at Purdue? You know, he's had some really good teams, but this one kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I actually itemized his best coaching jobs the other day, and I came up with like seven seasons that I think you can make a case for, including the one 2 years ago, where they lost all those guys, all of those seniors, 2 years after they lost Caleb Swanigan. And they damn near went to the Final Four. They won the Big Ten, damn near went to the Final Four. I think that was probably the best job he's done simply because they had to reinvent themselves so significantly. And I think that was a challenging team to coach. And I think he did a really good job managing personalities, managing egos, but also having to recreate that team from a defensive, offensive and defensive perspective. And doing it really well. And I think he's really kind of come of age as a coach. I think he's much more comfortable in what he has. He's much more comfortable in his own skin, so to speak, as a coach. I think he's got a lot more experience to draw from than he did a few years ago. And I think he's really opened his mind as a coach offensively. And I think that's really kind of changed the trajectory of Purdue's program. But the biggest thing about this season was they had to be more competitive. You saw the game Purdue played at Illinois last year where they scored 37 points. That was Purdue last year. When somebody got in their face, when somebody pushed them around, they just completely backed down. This year, when they went to Illinois, they still lost, but they at least competed. And that showed me a little something early in the season that I think those experiences, again, right off the bat, really helped Purdue really pay dividends kind of down the stretch of the season. I think that's a big part of the reason why they are why they closed the season so strong too.
Yeah, Brian, I've got a couple of questions for you as well. First of all, can you just talk about, you know, what the impact of hitting that game winner at Ohio State had on Jaden Ivey's kind of confidence and season, you know, afterwards? Because obviously afterwards he was inserted into the starting lineup and really has just, you know, scored a lot more since then. And also, how do you look at kind of the impending third matchup with Ohio State? Should Ohio State get that? That win in the second round. How do you look at that considering Ohio State went through, you know, improved so much after the second matchup with Purdue, but then also was on this kind of cold streak recently?
Yeah, I think that for Jaden Ivey, I think that was huge. He's never going to lack confidence. He's one of those kids that has unbelievable faith in his own ability, carries himself like a professional, has the talent to back it up. But it was a big deal for him. It was kind of validation. He'd been struggling with his jump shot. He'd probably been taking a few too many of them. It's not necessarily his strength at this stage of his career. So for him to make that big one really validated the way he sort of carries himself. He wants the ball in those situations. For a young guy, he's atypically unfazed by things like that. I think it was really big time validation for him. I think it was a really big deal for Purdue because right before that game, they had won that really tight game at Michigan State where they just kind of stole it at the end. And I think in those two games, you saw a Purdue team that just kind of learned how to win. And they didn't know how to win last year. They probably didn't know how to win earlier this year because they had a chance to win at Rutgers. They had the Miami game won and the Big Ten ACC Challenge. The combination of the Michigan State and Ohio State games were kind of where Purdue grew up, where they kind of learned how to win. And then they kind of went out in a few road games later, lost a one-possession game to Maryland, lost a one-possession game to Minnesota that they should have won. But Purdue wouldn't have won any of them last year. And I think those two games were really the turning point of Purdue's season. And I think it gave a young team a lot of confidence and a lot of self-assurance in really important situations where they knew they could play winning basketball when they absolutely had to. When they absolutely had to at Ohio State, obviously that's not an easy team to beat. That's a really hard team to beat. And Purdue did it twice in pretty close fashion. You know, they always say that it's hard to beat the same team three times in a season. I don't know why exactly they say that, because they're still the same team and you've had success against them before, but it would give me a lot of pause, you know, playing Ohio State for a third time, just because they're so good defensively, because they're so tough and they're so, you know, solid that, you know, Purdue has to play really well to beat them. They're going to have to play really, really well to beat them, because you got by the skin of your teeth the first two games. Ohio State's going to want to win. I don't think they have a lot to play for in the Big Ten tournament. They're obviously in the tournament. Their seed's probably set, but the thing about the Big Ten tournament is, you know, they always say it sort of comes down to who wants it the most, and I would have to think Ohio State's pretty motivated after losing a bunch of games there at the end of the season. So that's not going to be a walk in the park by any means for Purdue. I think they match up okay with Ohio State. Purdue's guards are a lot better this year, a lot more dynamic, a lot more tough, a lot more physical than they were last year. So that was the thing that Purdue couldn't overcome at Ohio State last year, was they just couldn't run their offense because their guards were getting knocked out of everything they wanted to do. This year they're better, but it's not like they're dominant. So the guards are still going to have a little bit of difficulty with Ohio State. If they play again, Purdue's just going to have to show that it's a better team now than it was when it won in Columbus and execute its offense at a higher level.
Hey, Tom, Doug again. You know, for opposing teams, the head coach at Iowa, Fran McCaffrey, he's always part of the show. You know, they love to bag on him on social media, and he does work the refs really hard. He gets excited about the game on the sideline. But, you know, talking with people who know him on the inside of the program and players that played for him, players that are there, it's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde thing. Talk about who's the real Fran McCaffrey. Is he the one we see, you know, on television working the refs, or is it the guy that the former players and current players really, really like a lot?
He is kind of a different guy away from the court. He's fiery. He's competitive. He gets fired up at officials. He gets fired up at his own players quite a bit too. And every game there seems to be a moment where we always call it the wrath of Fran, and where he just kind of lets loose and goes after the guys. And he gets kind of, I always say he's like in a machine gunner position, if you're in a foxhole or something, where he's just da-da-da-da-da. He's just going across, getting every guy, he's getting a little bit of Fran. But that's who he is. But the one thing he always says is, I can't go to that every game because otherwise they'll start tuning me out. I can only use that bullet every once in a while. But off the court, he really is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Generous with his time, raises hundreds of thousands of dollars for cancer research. And, you know, it's obviously impacted his family's life with his son, Patrick, who plays for Iowa now. But when, you know, I always remember that year, you know, the first year they went to the tournament and they ended up in the first four in Dayton, and Fran flew in after his son, Patrick, had surgery, cancer surgery that morning. So, and Iowa played Tennessee and ended up losing in overtime. But he's a consummate family guy too. He's just, you know, he's a good dad. Two of his sons play. Another son, Jack, who's end up being the best of the bunch, is coming. He'll be in ninth grade next year. And he's already, his son, Jack, who's in eighth grade right now, is like 6'5". So, he's going to be a pretty good ball player too. He's a really good guy. He really is very generous, sometimes almost soft-spoken, which is, he is, you know, kind of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, coming in, he's done a great job this season, by the way. And coming into the year, we all knew Iowa was going to be able to score. They have great chemistry on offense. They all know each other and where they're going to be on the court, and they have shooters that can knock down shots. But coming into the year, we thought Iowa was going to have to defend better to make it to the top of college basketball. How has that gone for them defensively? Have they taken that next step that they needed to take?
You know, it's interesting because Griffin will remember this, I think. The first Iowa-Ohio State game, Ohio State, I think, scored 89 points in that game. And they just kind of had their way in the last 5 minutes of the game. Iowa just couldn't get a stop. And Arns was, of course, hitting shots all over the floor against Iowa because that's what he does. And Kyle Young hit a couple big shots as well in that game. And after that game, and Iowa had just kind of been in this crutch where they would just go to their 2-3 zone when they weren't committed to man-to-man. And I think after that game, Fran just kind of told them, look, we're going to play man-to-man, and you guys are going to have to play it, or otherwise you're just going to get embarrassed, basically. And they're going to dedicate it themselves to being a man-to-man team. Since that time, they've, after that Ohio State game, according to Ken Pom, they were like 137 in the country, something like that, 137, 132. And, you know, the other day, now they're down to like 61. So nationally in defense, since that high water point against, after they'd lost 4 or 5, you know, they end up winning 7 of the last 8, and they've done it on defense in a lot of ways. And that's been really impressive that they've been able to become, I'm never going to say they're going to be an elite defensive team because that'd be silly, but I've always said that as good as their offense is, all they had to do is be slightly above average defensively. And if they can do that, they can go a long way in March. And I think they're closer to that. Now the question is, can you get stops in March? Because that's how you advance in the NCAA tournament, is if you get stops in March.
You know, sticking with the defense theme, Mike, you know, I was really glad today to see the Big Ten recognize Trent Frazier on the all defensive team. You know, we did a story last week, you know, five of the key things that led to Illinois being one of the most improved teams in the country over the course of the season. And there were some obvious ones, you know, Io DeSumo and the play and the, you know, the development of Andre Curbelo. But also one of them was Trent Frazier becoming an elite on the ball defender. How key is that for Illinois heading into this Big Ten tournament and onto the NCAA tournament to have a guy that can really wreak havoc on the perimeter like Trent?
Well, it's very important. I think, you know, and you guys just touched on it. If you want to win in March, you have to defend. Anytime you get to the Sweet 16 and beyond, round of 32 and beyond, you're talking about teams that can score and defend. You look at the last 20 national champions, and, you know, I think 17 of them are, you know, both of them are in the are in top 10 offensive efficiency and top 10 defensive efficiency. So you can't just be one-dimensional. The thing I'll say about Trent, and I've sung his praises a lot, when it comes to his ability to defend, and what makes it so impressive is the two biggest components for being able to defend at a high level are length and strength. And he has the strength, but anyone that sees Trent, you know, he's about 6'1", and he might have a 6'1 wingspan. He's not a very long-armed guy, and the way that I always describe it is if I'm guarding the ball, right, and I'm about 6 foot, probably have a 6 foot wingspan, but if I'm guarding the ball, right, and I stick my arm out to get a hand in because I want to be able to contest or, you know, put my hand in there if there's any type of crossover. But when you put a hand in and you have and you're 6'1" with a 6'1" wingspan, you're naturally just closer chest to chest with the offensive player. And what happens is when that player wants to drive, the angle that you have to make up to be able to cut him off is smaller than the angle if you're Brandon Paul, 6'3" with a 6'10" wingspan. The 6'10" wingspan allows you to be a little further off so that if an offensive player does drive, then you have a better angle to stop them. And so Trent doesn't even have that. What he does have he just has a knack for avoiding screens. You can't screen him. Ball screen, down screen, away screen. He refuses to get screened. And the reason why that's so important for Illinois' defense is when you refuse to get screened, there's no need for help. There's no need for rotations. And when you can stay out of rotations, that's when you're forcing the type of shots that Dwayne Washington was taking towards the end of that Ohio State-Illinois game. Like they were all 12-foot runners falling away towards the baseline. Like those are low percentage shots. And the beauty of it is, hey, you look at Illinois, they're this, you know, according to Ken Pom's sixth ranked from an efficiency standpoint, sixth ranked defense in the country. Okay. They're 315th in the country in forcing turnovers. They don't force turnovers, but what they do is they're sound. They're in gaps. They don't have to rotate. And a lot of that is because Trent Frazier refuses to get screened. And you know, what makes that so important heading into March, heading into the tournament, is you can go through a scouting report of a lot of different teams. And one of the first things is, hey, we got to take care of the ball. You got to take care of the ball against these guys. You can take care of the ball against Illinois. It might not matter because they don't force turnovers anyways. It's the quality of shots that they force you into. So, and Trent has a lot to do with that. He's the head of the snake. He's the one that's taken on typically the best offensive player on the opposing team. And the last thing I'll say about him is that the chip on the shoulder that he plays with, the mentality that he plays with, I think really galvanizes that locker room and galvanizes those guys on the defensive end. They've seen how serious he's taken that end of the floor, and it's contagious. And they want to be a part of that too. And this is a guy that didn't take it as serious the beginning of his career at Illinois. He was a scorer. He was a bucket getter. So for him to make that transition is what makes his defensive prowess even more impressive.
Now today the Big Ten came out with the all conference teams, and I'm just going to highlight the first teams of both coaches and media. No, really no surprises for the coaches team. Unanimous choices were Io DeSumo from Illinois and Luca Garza from Iowa. Kofi Coburn was on the first team, as well as E.J. Liddell from Ohio State and then Trevion Williams from Purdue. That was the coaches. And then for the media, it was DeSumo, Coburn, and Garza, with Hunter Dickinson from Michigan and Trace Jackson Davis from Indiana. Now, no surprises from any of those. Freshman team, Purdue had a couple, Jaden Ivey and Zach Edey. Keaton Murray from Iowa, Andre Curbelo from Illinois, and, of course, Hunter Dickinson from Michigan. Does any of those surprise any of you guys about what those – I mean, it, you know, freshman team, there's a lot of talented freshmen in the Big Ten this year. Just we'll start with Tom to talk about – Murray to see what was like what he was like this year.
Yeah, you know, the thing that jumped out to me was, is that the tallest first team all Big Ten team that I've ever seen? When you've got, like, you know, Luca Garza might be your small forward on the team. So it's just wild that I'm just kind of old school where you just kind of pick different positions, and but you know, obviously best five are probably those guys. So Keegan Murray's a great story. Some of you old timers might remember his dad, Kenyon, who played for Iowa, out of Battle Creek, Michigan, played early 90s for the Hawkeyes. And Keegan and his twin brother, Chris, coming out of high school, I think, you know, they might've had a Western Illinois offer, and that might've been about it. And they went to a prep school down in Florida and started getting some interest. But, I mean, you know, they were not highly recruited at all. And a lot of places had opportunities to recruit them. And, you know, most of the MAC schools could have had them very easily if they wanted to. And now that time at down in Florida at the prep school just seemed to pay off. And Keegan has come in and been one of the great surprises of this year. He's kind of fluctuated mainly off the bench, but he's fluctuated into a starting role when CJ Frederick was out. And he's just, you know, he has a knack for it. He made one of the really good plays of the year. Connor McCaffrey missed a free throw the other day against Wisconsin. It was, I think, like a tie game. And he got an offensive rebound off the free throw and was kind of falling out, almost about ready to fall out of bounds. He was looking for somebody to pass to and couldn't find anybody, and looked like he was just starting to lose his balance, calls a quick timeout. They get a timeout, score a bucket right after that, end up winning the game. So that was late in the game. So he's just got this knack to make big plays. And, you know, I'm sure we can have a debate. The interwebs, the Luca Io debate is obviously one that's raging on and on, and The thing I'll always say about Luka is Luka came in with a target on his back this year, and everybody was going to give him their best shot, and he's had swarming defenses against some double, triple teams. And he's met the challenge and put up the numbers. It's fun to watch. It's been fun to watch him play and watch him develop. And you won't find a nicer kid. He's a genuine article, just one of the nicest kids I've ever covered at Iowa.
Yeah, I can jump in here. Doug's imploring me to talk about EJ Liddell in the chat here. EJ Liddell made a much bigger step from year one to year two than I, and I think a lot of people were anticipating. I mean, I did not anticipate him being the leading scorer on the team this year. And I even thought, in the midst of Ohio State's seven-game win streak, I even wrote an article about the fact that I didn't know if EJ Liddell even could be a first team All Big Ten player this year. Definitely a second, but first team I thought was going to be tough, just because of all the talent in the Big Ten, and there's just a lot of guys that are putting up similar numbers to EJ in terms of scoring and rebounding and stuff, and just the amount of bigs that are doing kind of comparable things. But kind of as we touched on previously, they kind of just, put all the bigs in that top five anyway. So the position thing didn't really impact that. And EJ kind of snuck in there despite Ohio State's losing streak. But the thing is, EJ is putting up, huge scoring numbers at the end of the year, even while Ohio State's losing games. As I said earlier, the rotation has kind of shrunk for Ohio State, which has meant that EJ Liddell and Dwayne Washington have shouldered more of a load on offense. And the biggest thing with EJ Liddell in terms of his game, he would show some of the turnaround jumpers, the mid-range jumpers that he likes to do last year, but they didn't always hit, and he didn't always play. He's got this, big – he's only 6'7", but he looks just extremely physically strong. But he didn't always play with that physicality last year. This year, he plays extremely a physical, aggressive. He's guarding, opposing teams' seven-footers. I just got to watch him, bang around down low with, a guy in Kofi Coburn that's, 285 pounds, 7 feet tall. And EJ Liddell's 6'7", and he's having to make these, turnaround, fadeaway, mid-post shots. And, he's just been spectacular this year for Ohio State. And it was great to see him get that first team nod on one of the ballots there for the coaches.
Let me run through some Purdue stuff here real quick. I did vote for Trevion Williams for first team All Big Ten, just because I think he was like Purdue's everything for half the season. I think the single biggest factor for Purdue coming into this year for them to be successful, obviously their freshmen had a lot to do with it because they were one of the youngest teams in the country, but I think they were only going to go as far as Trevion Williams could take them. He was their one advantage coming into this year. In terms of personnel, they were going to play through him. They were going to give him the ball. They were going to let him make decisions. They were going to let him facilitate offense, score. He's one of the best rebounders in the country. They needed him to be the most consistent he's ever been, in the best shape he's ever been, and all of that stuff. And those were real questions, because his first 2 years were flashes of brilliance, but they were also, there's a lot of inconsistency there and things like that, but he was Purdue's everything for half the season. He set the tone for this entire season Purdue had with the way he played during the majority of the Big Ten season. He ended slowly from a statistical standpoint, but Purdue won every game at the end anyway. So with awards like this, I always err toward winning. That's why I put Trevion Williams first team. I didn't put Trace Jackson Davis first team. I did put EJ Liddell on the second team. That was my one big regret, but there's only five spots and there's no wrong answer on any of these. Regarding the All Big Ten freshman team, Jaden Ivey was a lock. He's clearly one of the best freshmen in the Big Ten, an NBA guy, probably sooner rather than later, not this year, but maybe next. For all we know, for a backup center, Zach Edey was one of the most influential players in the Big Ten. He turned what was a massive question mark for Purdue into strength. They didn't have a backup center coming out of last year. Matt Harms transferred out. The guy they had coming back, Emmanuel Dewona, didn't play a game this season because he got COVID in the offseason and has had respiratory issues all year. He was extremely unproven anyway, so Purdue had no idea who its backup center was going to be. And it's been years since Purdue didn't have two good centers on its roster. And they recruited Zach Edey, him having played like 2 years of organized basketball, thinking, let's see what we got here. And everybody assumed Edey would redshirt. He got to campus right away. He was a hockey player. He was a baseball player in Canada a few years ago. And he got to Purdue. He barely played high school or prep school basketball. He played at IMG Academy, which obviously was loaded. So they didn't need a whole lot from him. He barely played. So he got to Purdue and he'd barely done anything. And from his like first week on campus, they knew he was going to be a stud. And that's exactly how it played out. I don't know if anybody in the Big Ten filled a bigger hole for their team this year than Zach Edey did for Purdue. And he took a weakness for Purdue and he turned it into a strength. You saw how he ended the season with 21 and 20 in the final two games, carried Purdue down the stretch in wins over Wisconsin and Indiana. Regarding the All-Big Ten freshman team, I'm going to sound myopic here, but I actually put Brandon Newman on there too, over Keegan Murray, simply because Iowa has so much experience on that team that without Keegan Murray, you know, I think they're still pretty damn good. Brandon Newman started 95% of the season for Purdue, had a really good year, had some really, really big games where he won the game for Purdue. And I know it sounds like overkill to have three Purdue guys on the all-freshman team, but I think Purdue being the four seed and Purdue being more dependent on freshmen than any other team in the league, I thought it made some sense that the all-freshman team would really have a Purdue flavor to it. So that's how I voted. Obviously, that's not the way it went because Keegan Murray got the nod there. But I thought it was Hunter Dickinson, Andre Curbelo, and three Purdue guys.
Thanks, Brian. Since nobody's here from Michigan, we'll kind of just cover Michigan really briefly. Probably still the class of the Big Ten, I would say, although they didn't finish that way. Losing two out of their last three. They had those two games right in a row against Michigan State. And, of course, the thumping that they took to Illinois a week ago tonight, actually. But just, you know, top to bottom, you know, Hunter Dickinson, obviously the freshman of the year. There's no question about that. He's just a load. And then they've got, you know, guys like Franz Wagner, Eli Brooks, who did go out with an injury in that last game against Michigan State, so we'll have to see what his status is. But they're just, you know, Isaiah Livers, you know, just top to bottom, they're just, you know, a team that's dangerous, and you probably don't want to see them opposite you in the bracket as well. So, Mike, you want to talk a couple minutes about first-teamers for Illinois and then their freshman of the All-Big Ten, Andre Curbelo?
Yeah, and even just going off of what you said about Michigan, and I'll make this point about Wagner, Livers, and Dickinson, and really Brooks too, is, you know, I thought the way that the voting shook out was pretty indicative and of their team this year. They've always been a sum of the parts, offensively and defensively, and they kind of live as one and die as one, if you will. You've seen games, you know, when Wisconsin came in there, where they're all clicking at once. And it's almost that one guy impacts the next. And if one guy's clicking, it takes the attention off another guy who starts clicking. Then you saw the Illinois game where, you know, you were able to ice the ball screens and force the ball onto one side of the floor. And once you took one guy out, they were all out. I thought it was interesting to see that the voting kind of shook out that way too. But for Illinois, you know, it was a no-brainer for Io and Kofi to be on the first team. I'll touch on the Luka Io controversy, if you will. I thought both were well-deserving. Like, I thought if Io got it, you could almost say, man, Luka got snubbed. And if Luka got it, you could say Io got snubbed. Both of them had historic seasons in their own right. I would have preferred a co-player of the year. That's what I would have preferred. I think it wouldn't have been really fair to either of them. I thought Tom made a good point about the target that Luka had on his back coming into the season. And part of that, you know, when you're a really good player, it helps to have really good players on your team. Now, you could say the same thing about Iowa. I think the way that Iowa shoots the ball, was something that helps Luka Garza out. Like, I think it's one of those things where when you can surround him with shooters where, hey, yeah, we can double and triple Luka, but we're leaving Joe Wieskamp, we're leaving CJ Frederick. And that's what makes Iowa the, you know, arguably one of the best offensive teams in the country. Cause what do you do? I mean, how do you guard them? So, and then Kofi too. I mean, same thing with Io and Kofi, right? Like, Io's in the running for player of the year because he has guys like Kofi, because he has guys like Andre Curbelo. And the thing that I'll say about Curbelo is you get into the sixth man of the year and the all freshman team. I think it's a really good case study for a lot of Big Ten teams in terms of what a playmaker can do for your team as a whole. I know we don't have an Indiana guy in here, but Indiana could benefit from an Andre Curbelo. And the reason I say that is you can sit there and say, man, Indiana just doesn't have shooters. And that's why they're inept offensively. You know, they have Trace Jackson Davis. It's really hard to have shooters and shoot at a high percentage when you can't get good looks. And the only way you get good looks is if you have somebody that has dribble penetration that attracts some of the defense. You know, when you're just swinging it around the arc and hoisting threes, which I know Indiana doesn't take a ton, but the ones that they do are just kind of that, you know, of that variety. And I think Andre Curbelo, what he's been able to do is take a team that was poor at shooting threes last year, and Demonte Williams is shooting 55%. Io's 40% plus, you know. Adam Miller is shooting it pretty well for a freshman, and that's all because you have a guy commanding that attention offensively to where guys can get open shots. They can get open threes, and open threes mean higher percentages. So I think it's something that a lot of teams can look at and say, man, I know there aren't just Andre Curbelos out there. He's kind of one of a kind in the way that he goes about the game. And I wholeheartedly believe he's going to be, you know, one of the best point guards in the country over the next few years. May even be next year when you kind of fully give him the keys to the car. But I thought Illinois had a good showing when it came to the Big Ten awards, and I thought all of them were well deserved, and especially Trent also getting on the defensive team there. But all these guys, I thought Liddell was I had him on, you know, if I had a vote, I would have had him on the first team. You know, all those Purdue freshmen, you can make a case for all of them to be on the all freshman team. And, you know, I thought Brian made a good point about, you know, there was no team that was more heavily dependent on freshmen, than Purdue. So yeah. And then even just going down the line, Iowa, Luka, like I said, well-deserved. I actually think Wieskamp, the way he shot the ball and was able to spread the floor and, you know, for Iowa, I thought he could even potentially got a nod for first team, but I thought he was good there on the second team. And I do like the way they did it, where it's just, hey, here's our five best players. Cause once you start going point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, that's when you really start snubbing guys. So yeah, I thought it was pretty fair across the board. And I'm just really excited for this tournament to get rolling.
We'll wrap it up now with talking, going around in reverse order this time about everybody's pick on who will win the Big Ten tournament and why you think so. So we'll start with Brian from Golden Black.
Yeah, I would just add to the all Big Ten conversation there just now. There were a lot of situations this year where there was no wrong answer. Like the Io Luka thing, there's no wrong answer. The first team all Big Ten thing, there are no wrong answers. There's only less than ideal answers. You know, I guess that's how I'd put it, but really, really tough year to vote, as I think every year from here on out, the Big Ten is going to be, because I think what the league has been the last couple of years is what it's always going to be from here on out. I think we're entering a bit of a golden era here for Big Ten basketball. Big Ten tournament, I would, if I had to lay my money down, and I would never bet on college basketball because I worry about garbage time and things like that, but I would lay my money on Illinois because I think they, you know, we talk about the Big Ten tournament, who wants it the most. The way Illinois closed the season, they looked like a force of nature. And I think Andre Curbelo has taken another step here, having been empowered without Io out. I think he's Rajon Rondo, and I think he's going to be a star in the Big Ten. And I think with them you know, having a gripe about the Big Ten regular season title. I think they have every reason in the world to be motivated to try to get a Big Ten tournament title. They are some pretty competitive cutthroat dudes, and I could see them going to Indy with a significant chip on their shoulder. I wouldn't want to play Michigan. I think they're one of the best teams in the country. I wouldn't want to play Purdue right now because they're hot. That being said, Purdue's streak down the closing stretch here of the season came against some also-rans in the Big Ten. I would say Illinois. I think they have that competitive streak, and they have reason to be motivated right now, and they're obviously one of the best teams in the country to begin with. So if I had to – again, if I had to pick, I would probably say Illinois.
Griffin Strom from Buckeye Grove.
Yeah, you know, while I do think that Ohio State, you know, at its best, has shown that it can play with any team in the Big Ten, you know, came, you know, 5 points away from, you know, beating Michigan, and obviously has wins over Iowa, has wins over Illinois. But I will say I do tend to agree with what Brian was saying about, you know, Illinois just closing the year, you know, so well, aside from that Michigan State game, of course, having Io back in the lineup, you know, the when you look at Coburn and DeSumo and Curbelo, it's just such a dynamic, you know, lineup they have there with just the talent and just, you know, when Illinois is on, I think that team scares me maybe more than any other team in the country. Although, you know, a Michigan-Illinois game, you know, I think that game towards the end of the season was, you know, probably a bit of a fluke. Michigan just had such a horrible game, you know, offensively just shooting the ball and, you know, not moving the ball on offense. So that might have been a bit of an anomaly. So I think that game is a lot more competitive if we see that again. But I would probably favor Illinois with the way that they've been looking recently.
Tom Kakert from Hawkeye Report.
Well, I think it's probably Illinois and Purdue in the final. That's just my gut feeling. I think Michigan's kind of scuffling. I think Purdue's on the go right now. And I think they're going to be the two teams on Sunday. At Lucas Oil. I just think they're both running hot and they're both playing well and they're both playing with a lot of confidence. And the other thing, they're probably relatively healthy. I know Iowa's wearing the mask, but he's still healthy. And Purdue's healthy. Getting Sasha going again, I think, really makes them dangerous and gives them an experienced shooter that you need this time of year. So that's kind of my guess. And I would guess Illinois is probably going to win, but it wouldn't shock me if Purdue knocked them off. You know, Matt Painter's one of the most underrated coaches in the country. So that's my prediction.
And finally, Michael Tulip.
Yeah, I mean, I hate sounding like a homer. You know, I've been, because over the years I've been critical of Illinois in some spots, and but I tend to agree. You know, I do think my pick would be Illinois, and it's not just what they've done leading into this tournament. It's not just kind of what they have to play for. I just really like what they have in that locker room from a maturity standpoint. Because part of it's the ability to get past, like, hey, let's turn the page. I know we wanted to win the regular season, and if you have a younger team, it's you maybe hold on to that, and it distracts you a little bit. But I really like the ability of these guys to, hey, you know, let's turn the page. Let's keep that with us for motivation, but let's turn the page and get on to what we think are bigger and better things. And but the one thing that I will say is, I will never discount the importance of having, you know, having games before you play the double bye teams. And when I say that, I mean, I would probably be pretty shocked if this went chalk to the semis. You know, meaning that all four, you know, top four seeds are in the semis. So I'm really curious to see which one of these teams, you know, it may not be a Minnesota, Northwestern, Nebraska, Penn State, but one of these seeds, I think Ohio State is one of those teams that could make it all the way there to the finals. And I think they're due to kind of turn the corner. And and then you look at Maryland and Michigan State. You're a one seed. Michigan, congrats. You play Michigan State or Maryland. You know, those are tough matchups. So that's really the storyline that I'm looking for, is which one of these teams that doesn't have the double bye is really coming into these quarterfinal games with house money. My pick would be Illinois. I do like an Illinois-Michigan rematch. I would personally like to see that. But I certainly wouldn't be shocked to see one of these teams that are playing on Thursday, end up in the final or end up in the semis for sure.
I know. Let me add something to that real quick.
Oh, sure.
Wouldn't it be unbelievable if Michigan gets Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament? They will have played them 3 times in like 2 weeks, wouldn't they? That's got to be unprecedented. And that's the last team I'd want to play, 3 times in 2 weeks too, because you know how things tend to go with Michigan State. I wouldn't surprise me at all if all of a sudden they, found themselves in the finals just because they had that really good stretch down the end of the regular season. He always seems to know what kind of buttons to push and all that stuff. And I think it's as wide. I mean, it's a cliche to say this, but there was no Big Ten Media Day this year, so we have to get all our cliches in. It's as wide open as it's ever been, because I think there's 6 or 7 teams in the Big Ten that can get hot and, be really good over the span of a weekend. And it should be interesting.
I know it's going
to
be.
I would just say the shame on Mike LaTulip for wanting to see a rematch between Michigan and Illinois. And I think that's probably because he's a generation behind us. Jim, he doesn't have those nightmares about Sean Higgins in 1989 with the put back to knock him out of the Final Four. And I'm okay with them playing Michigan again in the Big Ten tournament, but I sure don't want to see him matched up with him in the NCAA tournament, especially in the Final Four. But hey, thanks so much, guys, for coming on for our podcast, Orange and Blue News. Great job, as always. A wealth of knowledge with the Rivals publishers in the Big Ten. And looking forward to a great tournament coming up this week. Thanks again, guys.
No problem.